I debated about whether or not I should pass out little packs of tissues to go with today's sermon. If you don't understand that clip, hang tight. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Last week we started this message called The Happy Committed Life. We've been talking about commitment all year long, and we want to have an understanding of not living in a committed life like we're obligated or it's that begrudging thing we have to do, but how to live in a committed life and be happy. Not happy as in I've always got a smile on my face and always a cheerful spirit, because let's face it, life can sometimes be tough. And you know what? Believe it or not, you may not believe this. Sometimes you might catch me in a grumpy mood. It just might happen. But how can I live satisfied? How can I live my committed life in such a way that I am satisfied? And what it really comes down is to the voices inside my head. It comes down to what is it that I am listening to in my life. And that's kind of where this wonderful little movie that came out this past summer ties back in, because Riley has got all of these voices going on inside of her head. So this morning, we're going to begin talking about that second little statement. Remember last week? We talked about blessed are the poor in spirit. We talked about the idea about happy are the people that manage to figure out how to be humble. Those that can take their spirit and empty it before God. And when we started that statement, it didn't make a lot of sense, but I think I can kind of understand how humble people can be happy people. But I got to be honest, after everything we've gone through over the past few years, this statement, it's a tough one. It says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Now, I got to tell you, if the word blessed means happy, happy are those that mourn doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Because mourning has nothing to do with happy. As a matter of fact, even if you look up mourning in Webster's dictionary, this is what mourning is defined as in the dictionary. The expression of deep sorrow over someone who has died. That's what mourning is. And man, I got to tell you, been to a lot of funerals over the past few years, seen a lot of mourning, and I don't know that happy is the word that I usually see go along with that. But somehow Jesus thinks it's supposed to make us happy when we are able to mourn. And I got to thinking, maybe God just doesn't understand the word mourn. Maybe in the world he doesn't get how we feel. And well, obviously he does. Did you know that the word mourn is mentioned 137 times in Scripture? The Bible speaks of somebody that is mourning. The first time you see the verse used is in Genesis chapter, the word used is in Genesis chapter 3, verse 2. This is what it says. She, this is being Sarah, died at Kiriath Arab, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan, and Abraham went to mourn Sarah and weep for her. So even Abraham, all the way back at the beginning, the man that was given the promise that his seed would be as many as the stars in the sky and the sand on the shores, that, you know what? He dealt with mourning. Think God doesn't understand mourning? Well, Jesus mourned. That's what we find out in John chapter 11, verses 33 through 30. We see it, 33 through 36. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? That being Lazarus, he asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him? Even Jesus, in the moment when he was standing beside a graveside, even knowing what he was about to do, he mourned the loss of Lazarus. You know, the dictionary defines it as the losing of someone, that the passing of someone has died. The Bible brings mourning a little even deeper. Mourning isn't always about physical death. Samuel mourned a lost relationship. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, 35, we read, until the day Saul died, he did not see Saul again. Though Samuel mourned for him, and the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. There was a relationship between Saul and Samuel, and things had kind of gone south. And Samuel was forced to basically put out the demise of Saul and let Saul know that God was done with him. And after that moment, it says, until the day Saul died, Samuel mourned that that relationship was no longer available to him. Nehemiah mourned. Nehemiah mourned a lost cause. This is what Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 3 through 4 says. They said to me, those who survived the exile and are back in the providence are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates have been burned with fire. When I heard these things, I sat down and wept. For some days I mourned and fasted and prayed before God of heaven. Nehemiah received this troubling report from Jerusalem. And there he was, and as he read the report or heard the report, and he heard about how Jerusalem was in disarray and God's kingdom, the center of Jerusalem, the center of the Israel nation, was in ruins, and the temple was gone, the gates were down, and the fire had burned down the walls, and the people there were in great trouble. And it says that Nehemiah could do nothing more than sit and weep and mourn at the situation that Israel now found itself in. Some even mourn the passing of time. Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 18 reads, I will remove from you all who mourn over the loss of your appointed festivals, which is burdened with reproach for you. Israel had a very festive religion. Their calendar was loaded with all kind of different ways that they worshipped, and they had these festivals and these feasts. And as time had changed, they had gone into captivity, and things had gotten difficult for them. Many of their traditions were gone. And the Israelites mourned that things had changed, that time had passed. And don't think we don't do the same thing. We mourn those that have died, but we also mourn people that we no longer have relationships with. And we also mourn situations that we can't control. We even mourn the passing of time. Hey, I'm only 47. My kids are still kind of young. But I have to confess, we have a hard drive full of pictures. And every now and then I find myself leafing through all of those pictures and remembering when they were little and they actually listened to me. They didn't have a choice, but they actually listened to me. And when Dad had a different meaning, and I mourn the fact that those days are changing. See, mourning isn't just about death. Mourning is about unrecoverable loss. This is what Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 15 says. This is what the Lord says. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. Anytime that there is something that has been a huge part of our life, a big part of our life, and that something disappears, there is something in our life that just doesn't feel happy anymore. We want to mourn it. And you know, Jesus says, happier those are mourned. Jesus says there's nothing wrong with mourning. There's nothing wrong with feeling these senses of loss. Sometimes we think we're supposed to be stiff upper lip, smile on the face, make sure that we don't ever let anybody see a weakness. And we want to build this little shell around us that says, you know what? I can endure anything. No tears. I can take care of it. I am strong enough to get myself through it. I think it does some damage. Because to be truthful, mourning puts everything into perspective. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 2 says, it is better to go to a house of mourning than a house of feasting. For death is the destiny of everyone, and the living should take this to heart. See, when we begin to mourn, we begin to understand that nothing lasts forever. There is absolutely, positively nothing on this planet that is forever. There isn't a relationship you have that won't be touched by death. There isn't an item that you have in your possession that time will not take its toll on. There isn't anything that doesn't have a life cycle that is on this planet. There is absolutely nothing that's forever. And when we come face to face with this emotion of mourning, that voice in our head that says things aren't right, and we begin to understand that, then it allows God to do some things. You see, the scripture says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. See, when I build that shell around my life, when I refuse to let myself feel sadness, when I refuse to let myself mourn over my losses, then you know what? There's no comfort for me. There's nothing there that makes things better. And this is where I want to bring in this clip that we watched. It's an important clip. Now, last week we started off at the very beginning of the movie. It was where we watched the birth of Riley and the birth of Joy and the birth of happiness. And well, now we're kind of near the end of the story, so I've kind of like spoiled the movie if you haven't seen it, but that's okay. Still go see it eventually. It's really a good movie. But Riley feels as though she's lost her life. See, around the age of 11, Riley's dad decided to move to San Francisco from Minnesota. And you want to talk about culture shock? That's a culture shock. And well, Riley's changes in the middle of all of that, her sadness got pushed off to the side and she lost her joy. And so you know what she was left with? Three things: anger, disgust, and fear. And you mix those three things together and you know what you get? Frustration. She can't feel happy, but she doesn't feel that she can feel sad, because her parents so desperately want her to be happy in the situation she's now in. She refuses to let her sadness take hold, and she begins to make some bad decisions, and she decides to move back to Minnesota on her own. She's going to run away from home. But she just can't do it. So she heads back to her parents, and it's time for her to do some confessing. And in that clip that you were watching, there she was in front of her parents. And I love the words, "You want me to be happy, but I just can't right now." She missed her friends. She missed her hockey team. She missed the lake behind her house. She missed the way that her life used to be. She was sad, and it was about time Riley began to mourn that loss. And you would think that the parents might be a little upset. I mean, after all, they've been trying really hard. They tried to find her a new hockey team. They put her in a good school to try to find some friends. And, you know, they had been trying to bend over backwards to try to make things work for Riley. But here she was, standing in front of her parents. She begins to mourn. The tears begin to flow. She begins to recap those memories, those little blue balls that they were holding up there, and it showed the friends when she was small and the lake where she learned to play hockey, and the tears began to flow. Something amazing happens. You see, from sadness comes joy. Now, everybody wants to know, what's with the little balls laying back behind here? Well, these were part of the movie. Well, these weren't. These physically weren't. But did you notice when Joy had the balls, they were yellow. And when she handed them to Sadness, the balls turned blue. And this had happened early in the movie, and everybody thought that was a bad thing, that having a memory that was supposed to be a happy memory turned sad would be bad for Riley. And the thing is, that's really where the healing began. When she began to look at these happy memories of when she had her friends and she had her hockey team and she was in Minnesota and all was right with the world. And she began to put those in perspective that those were gone and it was time to do something else. Robin's life began to change. Some healing began to happen. And Riley began to feel comfort. Did you see it right at the end of the clip? As Riley buried her head in her parents' chest, that little bitty smile came back onto her face. Because she now was in the comfort of her parents' arms. Blessed are those who can mourn, for they will receive comfort. If I don't mourn, then honestly, God has to wait. God has to sometimes withhold our comfort, withhold our ability to deal with the issues because He is waiting for us to realize we have to bring those issues to Him. Sometimes crying with our lips quivering, out of ideas, needing some suggestions. And then He promises, you will be comforted. You see, from sadness comes great joy. John tells us in chapter 16, verse 20, very truly I tell you, you will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. See, that's the way it's supposed to work. When we begin to mourn the things in our life, and even when the world looks at us and says, you shouldn't be mourning those things. You should be happy the world is changing. You should be happy that progress is happening. Things are better now than they used to be. That might be true. But there's still something that's been lost. And Jesus tells us, if you will just turn those over to God, I can take that mourning and let you be comforted. I can let you be comforted by time. Chapter 34, verse 8 reads in Deuteronomy, the Israelites grieved for Moses in the plains of Moab. 30 days in the time of weeping and mourning was over. That's a long time, isn't it? For a million some people to sit on a plain in the middle of nowhere and just weep for the passing of a leader. But it was necessary. But I also want you to see that it had an end. There was a time when it was time to put the mourning away. It was over. And so it was time for them to move on and do the next thing that needed to be done. See, when Jesus says, happy are those that mourn, He doesn't mean you get to stay there mourning forever. There is a time when you have to put it away. You have to allow time to do that thing that it does. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 12 says, they, this is again the Israelites, they mourned and wept and fasted till evening for Saul and his son Jonathan and for the army of the Lord and for the nation of Israel because they had fallen by the sword. They did the things that they should do to allow the passing of time, to allow God to move in and help them to feel comfort. But when time was done, it was time to get back to work. And I think too often we take this happier those that mourn that means I'm just supposed to stay right there. That was never the intent. You know, they say time heals all wounds. I don't know that it heals them, but it can definitely help them. And just because you're feeling really sad today or just because you're really struggling with something today, just know God has a plan, but it is going to allow time to pass. And it does mean that while other things in your life may be gone, life still goes on. I love the movie, A Good Man, Charlie Brown. You know I'm a big Peanuts fan. I can't wait. It's coming out in a few weeks. I know where I'll be opening night. If you want to see me that night, I'll be at the movies. I have plans already. So, but they had this movie, then Charlie Brown was sent to the spelling bee, and he was supposed to win the spelling bee, and he missed the word, and the very last word was the word beagle, and he misspelled it, which was kind of ironic because his dog was a beagle, so he shouldn't have ever missed that one. And he just came back home, and he felt he had let everyone down, and then his good friend Linus comes, and he stands beside the bed, and he says, "Yeah, Charlie Brown, you messed up. You disappointed everybody." And Charlie Brown's like, "Well, gee, thanks." And Linus is like, "But you know what? The sun still came up, Charlie Brown. There is still a life that needs to be lived. There are still things that need to be done. Life is moving on because time doesn't stop. So blessed are those that are mourning, for they will be comforted when they allow time to pass." But that's not the only way you're going to be comforted. See, blessed are you when you are mourning, because then you can allow others to comfort you. Romans chapter 12, verse 15, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn." When you keep everything bottled up inside of you and you keep all of those little blue memories chucked down and you put on the happy face and nobody knows that you're falling apart inside, but nobody can see that, then I want to let you in a little secret. We don't have any mind readers. Not even me. I can't read your mind. And when you're falling apart inside and you refuse to mourn, you refuse to let it come out, then those that are around you that want to comfort you, we can't do our job. We can't provide you comfort. We can't reach out into your life. We can't minister to you because you refuse to mourn. You refuse to allow what you're feeling inside to come out. You just wanted us to think, "I got it all under control." But you don't. And so we have to learn how to mourn. We have to be honest, because Jesus tells us, happy are those that can actually express their feelings. Happy are those that can feel sadness. Happy are those that can show sadness, because it is those people that begin to understand that they will be comforted by others around them. Other people will come alongside them and try to pick them up or encourage them, or maybe even cry with them. Remember Job? When he lost everything? It was three friends that came and sat for 3 days. Just sat there, not saying a word. Just to make sure he didn't go through it alone. So you'll be comforted by time, you'll be comforted by others, and most importantly, you will be comforted by God. Isaiah chapter 57, verse 18 says, "I have seen their ways, but I will heal them, I will guide them, I will restore their restore comfort to the Israelite, to Israel's mourners." And I love this verse because, understand, God already has a plan for your mourning. When you're feeling sorrow, when you're feeling anxious, when the world is just seeming to fall apart and nothing's making sense, God already has a plan. He says, "You know what? Bring your mourning to me. I'm a God who heals. That broken heart that you're feeling, yeah, I can fix that. Yeah, I can minister to that." Remember, a broken heart is an open heart. They can see God for who He is, and they can allow healing to begin. A heart that's wrapped up and protected and guarded. You know what happens when you let an infection do that? It's funny, we have a lot of medical people around, and they understand if you take something that's infected and you close it up and you make it to where it can't come out, the infection spreads even more, does it not? We call it gangrene when it starts to run through your body. I think a lot of us are suffering with gangrene hearts because we have allowed our losses to get inside of us, and we've held on to them, and we refuse to mourn our losses. We refuse to allow change to happen in our life, and we just want to stay right there. And so God can't heal. Not only can He not heal, He can't guide, because that's His plan. He's going to heal you, and then He's going to guide you. He isn't just going to fix the things that are broken. He's going to give you a plan for what to do next. That is if you allow yourself to mourn for it. God's going to give you the next step that you're supposed to. It may not be the next 20 steps. He may just give you the very next step. But He says, "I'm a God who heals, and I'm a God who guides those who are in mourning. I'm a God who restores. Isn't that what he did for Job? I've often wondered about the life of Job, because Job lost everything. He lost all of his money. He lost all of his family. He lost all of his possessions. He lost everything. And at the end, the only thing he didn't lose was his wife. And if you read the story, there may have been some times when he got really. But anyway, he had to keep the wife there because understand, at the end, Job was given new kids. Do you think those replaced the ones he lost? No. No. He probably still felt mourning, but God restored to him what he had lost. He gave him a new love, a new thing to focus on. But if Job had just sat there in that pile of ash where he had found himself with his wounds open and scraping his wounds and complaining to God about, oh, woe is me, then he would have never experienced the restoration. He would have never allowed his life to become complete yet again. He would become a miserable old man, probably all by himself, because really nobody wants to be around people that get to that point. He would become a miserable old man all alone in the world. But Job chose to mourn. And God restored him, and that's what God wants to do for us. He wants to restore us, and then he wants to, well, comfort us. You think God doesn't understand comfort? Talk to Jesus about that. You think God doesn't understand that, yeah, I know things are bad and I know you're hurting right now and I know things are difficult, but you know what? I've got comfort for you. I've got shoulders that you can shed those tears on. I've got a chest that you can bury that face in. I've got comfort that I will wrap my arms around you and allow you to experience comfort for those things that you have lost. Notice in all of this verse, what does he not promise? To give you back what you lost. He doesn't say he's going to give you exactly what was there. He just says, I'm going to bring you along in such a way that you will be able to feel comfort. But there's a condition. According to Joel chapter 2, verse 12, only when we're ready to mourn. Even now, declares the Lord, return to me with your heart, with your fasting, with your weeping, and with your mourning. Jesus tells us, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. You realize the reverse statement of that, the flip side of that statement, don't you? If you refuse to mourn, you're probably going to refuse to be comforted at the same time. You're going to find yourself stuck in that spot, maybe for the rest of your life. And happy? Joy? You'll never be able to find them. You're just going to keep rehashing those details over and over and over and over and over. And here's what you need to know. God is waiting. God is waiting for you to be willing to mourn, to allow your heart to break for the things that you have lost in your life. It's okay. It is perfectly fine when you have experienced a loss in your life, whether it be some loved one that passed away, whether it be a friendship that has ended, whether it be some kind of a business thing that has gone wrong, whether you find yourself in a hopeless situation. Tears are acceptable. This is not baseball. You're allowed to cry. Seriously. Tears are not only acceptable, they may be required. Because it's only when you allow your heart to break for the circumstances that you find yourself in can you feel the comfort that God has for you. And then you will understand, happy are those who mourn because they will be comforted. I can be happy because I know now how I can deal with the sadness in my life. That's important for us. because there are going to be more losses. It's going to happen. It's part of life. And I find it interesting, right out at the gate, we deal with the idea of be humble, get yourself right before God, and then the next thing he wants to talk about is how to deal with sadness. Because God knows we're going to have sadness in our life. And it's at the point that we allow ourselves to feel that sadness openly, honestly, and allow ourselves to be comforted that God can work our way through it.